All right. So how was your Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving was good. It was peaceful, a little bit different. Spent a lot actually on like Black Friday, not in physical sales, but in like cyber stuff, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Even though I guess it's Cyber Monday, I didn't wait till Cyber Monday. I just bought everything on like Friday and stuff. Finally, like updated the phone and all of that stuff. So I've got like packages coming in.
I mean, the thing is, nothing actually applies to the actual days they are now. Like Black Friday sales started like the week before Thanksgiving. And, you know, every place had their Black Friday sale going on Mondays and Tuesdays and whatever. So it's not even really any specific day anymore. Like Cyber Monday and Black Friday are all just the same sales. Like,
and then there's Giving Tuesday and like Small Business Saturday. I kind of like it though. Like they feel like weird little mini faux holidays.
I mean, it is one long holiday though. Like that's the whole thing. And it's just, I didn't really see a lot because I wasn't paying much attention, but I'm hoping there wasn't as many like crazy crowds this year for Black Friday.
I didn't really hear anything about that or like on like Twitter or YouTube or such. There wasn't like the video images where you see people shoving and stuff. I definitely know people were out and about though, but like,
yeah, I think the only thing I saw, there was like a picture of a bunch of people in a mall waiting outside a game store hoping to get a PS5. And that, like, they were all wearing masks, but they were all like crowded right next to each other and like in a mall inside at a game store waiting for it to open. And so that kind of was just like a, well, people are still being idiots, so that's fine.
I mean, I'll confess, like, when I got my phone, I had to do a curbside pickup, so I had to go to the mall and like, it was actually, I was like a little freaked out by it, but I wore my mask. I went in. They immediately just checked me for ID, gave me my, they actually checked my ID, checked my temperature, and then gave me my like package and everything. I had already paid online, and then I left.
They checked your temperature?
They checked my temperature. I was the only one in the line. Like they had a line barrier thing. There's nobody in it. But they checked my temperature using like the laser gun thing. And then I had to walk through the line barrier. And by the time I got to the end, they were like, hey, buddy, we got your stuff. Here you go. And I was just like, I could have just crossed the line and like come straight here. And they were like, you got to walk through the line. That's the rules. And I was just like, well, okay.
At least they were organized about it.
Yeah. And I kind of felt like safe like with that. It was like comforting in a way.
That doesn't sound like curbside, though. It seems like they're using a very generous definition of curbside pickup.
It was curbside pickup, meaning outside of the store, but the store was still in the fucking mall. So I had to walk to, like, I had to go inside of the mall with my mask and everything. And then outside of the store, they had that line thing set up. And I happened to, the other weird thing that was kind of amusing, the guy was like, hey, nice Overwatch shirt. And I was like, oh, a fan.
Were you wearing one of the league shirts that we got when we went to see
I was them? Wearing my Washington Justice, and I was looking at it. It doesn't, like, it's not clearly obvious that it's an Overwatch shirt. It just says Washington on it, but it has the arm patch. And from the arm patch, the dude was like, yo, nice.
Cool. That means he's not just an Overwatch fan. He's an Overwatch League fan, because you've got to know the teams.
Yeah. So,
can you believe that was this year?
That's what I was about to say. Like, I have those shirts, but it's like all of that seems forever ago. Like, I'm so glad I bought two shirts for some stupid reason. Like, from the yesteryears, it feels like.
Yeah, we got really lucky that the Washington homestands were early in the year. There were a lot of teams that didn't actually get to play at home or for an audience at all because of everything that happened.
And when we saw it, it was like, when we saw it, there wasn't like this idea at the time, I think, of like, oh, this is all going to go away. I don't think we were in that kind of phase even yet of like the illness. It was just like, we were complaining, oh, this is so long, this is forever and stuff, but oh, this was still fun, but man, this is too long.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a lot different. Like, I don't think, because, like, we went before I went to PAX.
Yeah.
Yeah, that so like it was. I think the Justice played the weekend before PAX.
It was one of the earliest ones. Yeah, like
opening. Yeah, it was in February. So, God, and like February, like it was around, but it hadn't really hit the U.S. yet. And like other places were starting to lock down, like China and, you know, Europe and some other places had started it, but like it hadn't hit the U.S. yet, and we weren't in any sort of like worry.
Yeah, and it wasn't on our radars really.
It just feels like an entirely different time.
It's a gamer. We're here. It's a gamer.
Pay me for this, goddammit. Burble, burble, burble. Burble, burble, burble. Bloop.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Make Me a Gamer, the procedurally generated podcast that's a roguelike for your ears. I'm your host, T-Man, and I'm here with...
Harvey Z, in the place to be.
You cut out a little bit on me there, but that we're not going to worry about that. I think you're recording fine. I think it's just... You're getting used to the microphone, right? Probably.
Yeah, it's the microphone's right here. It was a little bit weird, but I think it should be good. We'll see if this one's higher quality. So
if the quality has suddenly changed... It's because Harvey Z finally got a cord for the microphone that I gave him. Because we used to record like it together in the same room. And clearly we can't do that anymore and haven't been doing that. And he's been recording with his laptop mic. And so a while ago, I gave him the microphone that we were using when we recorded in person with all the equipment and stuff. But he didn't have the cord, the USB cord to hook it up to the computer, and we're finally getting around to actually using it. So hopefully all this comes out sound-wise okay, and everything's recording good, and we get a little better quality overall. But we'll see.
Sure.
Yep. That's so that is the explanation, the behind the heat, the behind the scenes sausage.
So this is something kind of weird. I know we kind of had our intro and everything, but so I was listening back to some of our old episodes, as I am wont to do. Uh-huh. I was back on episode like 45, which was Voodoo Fight Club.
Uh-huh.
And while the intro is still one of my favorite intros of all time, but like it was actually the part as I was getting into the episode. You remember when we used to do like the Harvey Z snaps?
Uh-huh. That we kind of stopped because of everything.
I felt like... I'm okay with it stopping because I listened to 45 and it was really weird because the choice you gave me on the spot was, would you get rid of movie theaters or would you get rid of television? And I said in that one, I thought about it back and forth, and then I chose to get rid of televisions and I would rather keep movie theaters and everything going. And now just listening back to that, it feels so weird and surreal.
Like, that is weird when you think about it, because like, so if we had gotten, if that had actually happened and we'd gotten rid of televisions, imagine how crazy people would have gone.
It's just like, because that's what I, in that, in there, we're discussing, oh, we couldn't get rid of movie theaters. We need them. They're an institution. And I'm defending why I'm getting rid of televisions as like, yeah, people will have chaos and news and they wouldn't be able to engage with their politics and stuff. And I'm just like, this is so weird to like listen to pre-election, pre-everything that's happened. Like, whoa, I'm in the wrong timeline.
It's so weird to think about how like literally we're living through a major event. Like, this is going to change our perspectives on everything.
Yeah.
You know,
like society. Or at least
it should in reasonable people. There's a lot of people who are just kind of like, fuck it, we're going to do whatever we want anyway. Usually they're rich people. But it's just, God, it's so weird that we've lived through literally several life-altering, like, major monumental events in our life, and it's odd to think about things previously.
Like, you would think it's like a once in a lifetime thing, but we've had like two or three once in a lifetime things, it feels like.
Yeah, like 9/11 started it off, and like that changed everything, like how we fly, like security measures, you know, things like that. And then, you know, just like the general traumatic event of 9/11, plus it starting a, you know, 20-year war that we still haven't finished. and, you know, that's just like a constant in our lives now. Then the 2008 crash, which destroyed the housing market and made it nearly impossible for us to, you know, our generation to get jobs and live through that sort of thing.
Yeah. I was going to add in before 9/11, because that's the probably most significant, but the other really big one that I remember, Columbine.
Yeah, like Columbine.
It changed like how school was pre-Columbine and post-Columbine.
Oh, like, yeah, yeah. Columbine was another big one, because that was the first, like, and now, like, school shootings are routine. Yeah. Except since COVID, you know, there hasn't been a school shooting, so, you know, hey, you know, thank goodness for that.
It is weird to think about all the historical events, but it's also weird to know, like, 9/11 is almost 20 years ago, and there's people who are alive and, like, out there who've never experienced it or have no idea of these changes. Sort of like when we think of, like, Pearl Harbor or something, and we didn't live through it, so it's like, oh, this is just some distant thing. But for some folks, it's, like, right there.
Oh, you know, the Civil Rights Movement. The AIDS crisis in the 80s, you know, any Vietnam, any and all of those things that were like defining moments of their generations that we kind of look back on and are like, hey, that's a thing that happened, but we've only lived in the post effect of them existing. And so there's a lot of people who, like, post Columbine, post 9/11, you know, kids who are growing up and just think that flying in an airport is always, you know, got to take off all your clothes before you get on an airplane and go through security. Anyway, we're a games podcast. We occasionally talk about video games on this podcast and not wax poetic about life and how we're old and things happen.
Living through history. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk about video games. Sure.
I saw a funny Onion. It's an old headline on the Onion, but it's a funny one where it says it's just simply history size repeats itself.
Oh.
Yeah. Good times. Okay. So video games. I've got games I've been playing. You've got at least one game you said you've been playing.
It's pretty much, yeah, just one game. Because, so, over the holidays and stuff, I've been talking with my sibling. My sibling reintroduced me to Hearthstone. And I know I've mentioned the game before. You're familiar with Hearthstone, the sort of like Magic the Gathering. It's a card game, but it's online. I hadn't played it in apparently like 3 to 4 years. And
yeah. It felt like the last time we talked about it, you had played it a little more recently than that.
I'm trying to think. It's been, so what they've done in it is they measure, like, every year they change, like, it's like a zodiac thing, the year of the rat, the year of the dragon kind of thing, and they change, like, the cards and all of that stuff. And it's a really clever money grab, because when the year changes, all the cards from the previous year kind of phase out. And so if you want to play competitively, you can't play the old stuff. And it also means, oh, you got to buy new stuff. Like, I had a lot of legendary and, like, rare cards from, apparently it's 3 years ago. That's why I remember it that way. And so now my decks all suck and I have to make new decks. And I don't have, the basic cards are still there, but everybody has, like, new cards with new mechanics. And so that's why I'm like, I know I've missed at least 2 years in the game. But what my sibling introduced me to was there's been tons of updates to it, and there's new ways to play it, one of which is called Hearthstone's Battlegrounds. And I know you had talked about playing a different game that had a similar mechanic, which at the time I was confused by, where you were playing a game, it was an online competitive game against multiple groups of people, and you basically set your pieces up and you're trying to collect new pieces, and if you get three of a kind, it becomes like a golden or it upgrades or something like that.
Yeah, I think that was Team Fight Tactics, I want to say.
Yeah.
It was like the auto chess where...
Yes.
You have... Yeah. Like, the battles themselves are automated, and you, like, level up your characters as you get them and beat people.
That's exactly what sort of Hearthstone Battlegrounds is where you can have 7 pieces, and you can upgrade them and get more expensive pieces, And the thing with it is all the pieces are based on like card games, but it's not a card game anymore. It's just you set your field and you can change like the positioning. But once the battle starts, it automates, it attacks, and then it picks a winner after like, it's usually pretty brief, like 30 seconds or so. And then you go back into this like other mode where you're sitting and buying cards and upgrading units to prepare for the next battle. And so it's eight people who kind of face off basically two at a time. So everybody faces a second person and you have a life, like when your life bar goes to zero, you're eliminated. And the goal is to obviously be last one standing kind of thing. It's very different from the card game. And like there's, I don't know if in Tactics they had it where, oh, certain synergy, certain pieces have synergy with other pieces. And so you want to collect a set of pieces or you want to collect like, oh, if you get these four guys, they can boost each other or that sort of thing.
Yeah, this sounds almost exactly like it sounds like they just added this mode to kind of copy like the Team Force or Team.
So this is where Team I'm Fight not sure,
Tactics and that sort of thing, because like it's the exact same in that like you it's a group of eight people. You level up in between rounds based on like your point score and everything, and like if you lose enough, you're eliminated, and you know, last person standing wins the whole match.
And I'm just trying to think of which one came first, because Hearthstone's been around for a while, but it may have only been it came out November 12th, 2019, so it's been around for about a year.
So yeah, and I think I was playing Team Fight Tactics back at the beginning of 2019, so definitely I think was introduced after, because like I think Auto Chess was a spin-off of League of Legends or maybe Dota. I think Auto Chess was a spin-off of Dota, and Team Fight Tactics is a spin-off of League of Legends, and they're both basically the same thing. But I think they started the mod that started that sort of thing was back in 2018, and it wasn't until 2019 that it was like became like an official game. It's some sort of scale like that. Like that's around the time frame that I'm not super into it, obviously, but
yeah. And so I guess the big point of that though is, so my sibling plays this constantly and has been playing it for the last year or so. And what ended up happening was, so I was watching them play, and so there's a ranking system, and they were saying they reset the ranking system about a month or 2 months ago. So everybody became zero rather than whatever they were for the last year. And so my sibling's already at 7,000, and 10,000 is what you need to go pro. And you only win. Yeah, I was like mildly impressed. And then I started watching them play. And like, holy crap. Like, they're not normally a gamer or really good at video games, but watching somebody who has incredible skill at a game is amazing. And like, they were trying to teach me and get me into this game, but they were making moves so rapidly and so quickly. Like, they knew the ratios, they knew the levels, they knew the pieces, they didn't even need to think about it. While for me, like, I'm slowly reading the cards, or I'm like, oh, this piece will have synergy. And they're like, you need to, on turn 10, hit refresh two times and buy this piece, and then, or look three times for this, and then you'll find that fifth missing piece. Like, they knew combos in their head just like that. Like, it was automated for them, because all they do is they constantly play this game in the background while they're doing other stuff as well. And like, so I started at level zero, and I was just blown away by like how skilled my sibling was at the game. And like, well, then
that's what happens when you play a game over, like, and over and over again. You start to learn all the stuff. It's why like my friends who all play Magic the Gathering, they will sit around and like they'll break out into a Magic the Gathering discussion. And they'll just be like naming cards, and everyone in the conversation knows exactly what the card is, what it does, what its mana cost is, you know, probably the artwork that's on the card. You know, they just know these things, despite the fact that there are giant amounts of cards that are Magic cards. There's like a limited amount to what is played and like what is actually good. And so, but just if you play anything long enough and get that sort of knowledge, like I sit around and listen to a Magic conversation. I'm like, I don't have any idea what any of the they're talking about. Like, I know what Black Lotus is. You guys still play with that?
Oh, T-Man. So, needless to say, they got me into the game. And, like, then they started to play for me, like, telling me what to do and stuff. I ended up, by the end of Thanksgiving weekend, around 4,000 in my rank because of them placing, like, first or second. Because, again, I'm playing against lower-level people, and so they're just, like, crushing these fools. And
so now how I'm fast suddenly... did you lose that ranking once they weren't there to tell you how to play anymore?
That's what this week has been. I've been playing now on my own, and it's sort of like watching, like, a baby horse try to walk. And it's like... I know how to do things, but, like, my sibling is just doing it automatically. Like, they can make 20 moves in the time it takes me to make, like, 10 moves kind of thing. And, like, I'm still looking, and I'm not the most efficient. I'm surprisingly holding my own in the sense of, like, I think yesterday or 2 days ago, I actually got first place for the first time. Mm-hmm. They only got first place twice. No, they've gotten zero first places under mine. They always could score in the top four. And you get points for in the top four of the eight. I've gotten one first place now, and I'm really fucking proud of it. But, like, it is weirdly addictive and fun because it's fast-paced. And it's just, it's the setting up stuff. It's not a lot of, once the match happens, it just executes in, like, 30 seconds. And then there's a winner and a loser. Done. And then you go to the next match.
Cool. So you've been having fun. Have you been playing, like, the regular Hearthstone, or have you just been playing this mode?
Every so often I'll play the regular ones, but this is where that problem is of, like, the regular game, I need to have cards. This one, you don't need cards, because it's all about the buying and selling of pieces. The cards one, because I'm lacking, it sucks so hard. So I ended up playing, like, the bonus mini game modes, where it's like, oh, we'll give you a random set of cards and see how long you can go, or you draft a deck kind of thing. I'll play those things, but that costs, like, money. Like, not real, well, you can pay real money or in-game currency that you build up from, like, winning previously or leveling up and stuff. And so I happen to, over the 2-3 years, have, like, money left over. And so I've been using that supply. But at some point, I'm going to run out. And I don't feel like I'm really trying to avoid paying for this game again. Because back in the day, like, my sibling and I would, when the new expansion would come out, drop, like, $20 or $30 to buy, like, the 20 booster packs or whatever. And it was all just online. And then that year mode just makes it all moot by the end of the year. So it really kind of sucks to have to, like, oh, I spent, like, $50 on this game, and now I got to do it again next year.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I've never really gotten into any of those sorts of... It's why I don't get into many multiplayer games. Because it's always, like, you got to pay more to get the new upgrades or the new season battle pass or whatever. Like, the new Fortnite season started today. And, you know, so everyone who's playing Fortnite has to fork over the cash so they can get the new skins and everything.
But that's just aesthetics. It's not like a pay-to-win kind of thing.
Yeah, no, the Fortnite isn't like that. But it is different for, like, Magic and Hearthstone and those sorts of, like, competitive games where to actually stay in the game, you have to spend money on the new stuff they're making. It's why I got out of Magic as a kid. Like, I played a lot of Magic in high school, specifically, like, my freshman year of high school was pretty much Magic related. Like, that was the hobby I did during during high school. And I realized, basically, during the summer between freshman and sophomore year of high school, I was like, I'm spending all my extra money on Magic cards. And it was like an addiction because I wanted to, like, have, like, the best decks and keep up with everything. And whenever there was a new expansion, I wanted to be a part of it. And I was like, this is getting down slippery slope territory where I'm just going to be spending all my money on Magic cards. And I couldn't do it anymore. So I ended up stopping. Yeah. Yeah. I think the only Magic cards I've bought have been one of those starter deck things that you got.
For Ravnica. Yep.
Yeah, yeah, that to play against you. And then I did try out the Magic the Gathering online
system.
It's pretty good. It works. Yeah, I think it's Magic the Gathering Arena. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of fun with it for, like, the week that I played it. But, you know, it's just like Hearthstone, and the other games where like there are seasons and, you know, anytime they release new stuff, you have to buy new cards and, you know, you don't have access just because you're playing online. It doesn't mean you have access to every card in existence. So you can't just make your own custom decks out of whatever from the beginning. You have to like win and upgrade and get points and whatnot to add new stuff to your deck.
Oh, that's the turnoff then for me. Cause I'm like, because my original thing is I've spent probably $1,000+ on Magic because every like couple of years I get re-addicted to it and mm-hmm. I buy a whole bunch of packs and stuff. And then I end up like quitting it cold turkey, or I still have packs all around the house and I'll play them with like my sibling. I got them into it. But then the tricky part becomes, yeah, like here with the physical copies, I can always pull it out and play it again. But like with that Hearthstone kind of thing of where, oh, after a year, it all goes away. If Magic the Gathering did that, oh, that would suck so bad.
Yeah, like I don't know if Magic the Gathering does that specifically in their online. But what it does do is it's like you have to earn access to cards. And like you start off with like a couple pre-made decks that you can play with, and then as you progress you unlock more cards of the color you want and can customize your deck a little more to how you want to play versus like the couple starting decks that they give you. And you know, it makes sense, like if they give you access to every Magic card and let you customize your own deck no matter for whatever you want from the very beginning, why in the world would you ever collect actual Magic cards? You can just play online and have access to everything. So it makes sense from a business standpoint, but like it's just sucks because I don't want to be like stuck in a certain way to play up until a certain point where I can customize the way I want it. And like, it's a lot less freedom than if you, you know, go out and buy your own Magic cards, but then you have to pay extra for find them and all that good stuff.
So that's my gaming side of things.
Yeah, that's cool. I think I played the original Hearthstone for like a little bit, and you know, it was fine. But again, I think I was trying to play it on a phone that was just slightly too old to really be able to play it well when I got into it. And I think the fact that it was like burning through my battery and loading was really bad on it, yeah. I ended up not actually getting into it, which is probably a good thing in the long run.
I will say, like, it has the one thing that they did do really nicely is there's a lot of one player modes, and they have some really interesting and fun solo missions. And I think a year or two ago, they basically made all of that stuff free. So if you buy or you have the initial game, you don't have to do any of the multiplayer side, and you don't need to buy extra cards, although they do help, but you can gain cards like weekly. But if you play through the solo missions, they're more than just, oh, you have to face this enemy. It's usually, oh, this is a win condition, or this is a story thing that's going to be happening in the background, or you can only play these types of cards. So it's there is a way to play it solo for a while.
That's cool. I do appreciate that. I'm pretty sure when I played it, there wasn't any sort of solo stuff. Cool. So speaking of solo stuff, I have been playing some solo games, if you will. God, it's been a while since we talked. I think I did want to talk about Miles Morales, because I played the new Spider-Man game. And I've been playing Yakuza Like a Dragon as well.
I really want to hear about Yakuza Like a Dragon. Because what the
you're
fuck
not,
is
You're
it?
Not interested in Spider-Man?
I am, but I'm really fascinated just from what I'm seeing online and stuff. And I'm like, what is this game? Because I thought it was like GTA. And I'm like, the stuff that people are talking about doesn't seem GTA-wise.
Yeah, it's very interesting that you make that thought, because I also for a while thought the Yakuza series was some sort of GTA. So let's set the record straight here. First of all, Yakuza is not in any way, shape, or form like GTA. What you might be thinking of, and there was a game that came out a while back during the 360 PS3 era called Sleeping Dogs.
Uh-huh.
And that is an actual sort of like GTA-esque game where you're like, I can't remember if it takes place in China or Japan. I want to say it took place in Tokyo, but I don't remember for sure. But either way, it's like, and it's like you steal cars and drive around the city and do missions, and there's a lot of driving and everything involved. And Yakuza is not that. As far as I'm aware, all of the Yakuza games usually take place in like one city area. So you like, you get to know, it's like, it's not open world in the sense that we're used to thinking of open world, where it's like Breath of the Wild, you can go to that mountain and climb it, or GTA, where you drive around and have a rocket launcher and blow up whoever you want, sort of thing. It's like a very, it's like a set city with an open map that you can like run around and stuff, but it's, you're not like doing whatever the hell you want in this setting. In most of the Yakuza games, from Yakuza 0 to Yakuza 6, the gameplay is like action brawler, where basically it's like you're fighting kind of like Streets of Rage-esque.
Uh-huh.
You know, and you have like different stances to do different types of attacks and things like that. And like, so like the main action gameplay, it was just like you run around and you get into fights with other street thugs and like random people, and you know, you're fighting Yakuza guys and stuff like that. This is the combat. And then Yakuza Like a Dragon, the one that I'm playing, basically they made an April Fool's joke last year, I want to say, about how they were switching Yakuza, the next Yakuza was going to be turn-based RPG combat instead of a brawler. And people responded so strongly and like that idea so much that they actually shifted their game design to turn the next Yakuza game into an RPG. And people like there are different values of skepticism from people because of how strong the game is. Like, they can't have like turned it around and changed it in that short amount of time based on how quickly it was turned around to release, because it released in Japan earlier this year.
Uh-huh.
So I've gotten into Yakuza 7. It's called Yakuza Like a Dragon in the States, and it's a completely new story. Like, literally Yakuza 0 through Yakuza 6 are all the story of one singular protagonist. And so you're like, you can't just pick up Yakuza 4 and start there, because it literally is like following the story of this guy. So it's just kind of like a big ask, you know. It's like starting the Wheel of Time series, or, you know, starting the MCU from the very beginning and watching everything before you go to Endgame. And like, I can't just jump into Yakuza 5. I have to play all of them, and all of the games are like 40 to 50 hours worth of content, because it's all very story heavy in addition to, you know, like the regular combat and side quests and everything. But Yakuza 7 is a brand new protagonist, brand new set of characters, and so it is a good jumping in point, especially since it's a completely different genre. And so I've started playing it, and I really like it. Like, I'm already an RPG fan. It's been a while since I've played a good one, and this one is like really scratching that itch, because it like plays with all the RPG tropes so well. Like, there's a job system, and the literal job system is you go to a work assignment place for like people who are looking for jobs, and you talk to the person at the desk and they change your job for you. So like, you're literally applying for a different job. You can be like a musician or a bodyguard or a poker table dealer, sort of. There's like all these different things you can be, and you know, like, some of the classes and jobs are just crazy, because like one of the guys is a homeless guy, and his literal job description when you like he joins your party is homeless guy. and his magic spells are summoning pigeons to attack people or breathing fire with an alcohol bottle. And, you know, this sort, all sorts of like weirdly, like you aren't casting actual magic. It's like not realistic, but still like based in real world type stuff. It's such a fun, unique game. It balances serious drama with completely, utterly insane, weird shit. There's a chapter where it's just like talking, you're basically spend time with in this homeless camp because the main character like gets out of jail early on. Like the plot of it is the protagonist spends 18 years in jail for a crime another Yakuza committed, because, you know, he's honoring his Yakuza family. And when he gets out, they want nothing to do with him and he has absolutely nothing. So he ends up at this homeless camp and he spends time with a bunch of homeless people. And so it's all very serious and very like, you know, people, you know, look down on us, and this real, very serious perspective on homeless crisis and, you know, what we need to do to help people and how society undervalues homeless people, even if they're just, you know, stuck and in mm-hmm. not even in that position due to their own fault. Like it's just, you know, something that happens, but like people still look down on them anyway. And so this is just real serious. And then you end up, there's side missions where you have to rescue some guy's pet crawfish, or some guy hears a baby crying in an apartment and thinks that you have to go save the baby. So you like run upstairs with this baby formula, and it's a bunch of Yakuza in diapers having like a baby fetish type thing. And they get angry that you stormed into the thing and fight you, you know? And it's just all this weird, like it balances serious drama with these insane, crazy, hilarious, you know, side quests and random shit happening in the game. And I'm enjoying it a lot.
Yeah, that sounds like a game I'd want to play. Like every little like gif and thing I've seen online has just been insanity.
Yeah, it is. It's insanity in the good way. Like it's everything from the presentation to like how you can tell the game takes itself seriously when it needs to, but also knows how over the top it is when it's not in that. I don't know. I think you would like it because you like turn-based stuff, don't you?
I do like turn-based stuff.
Yeah. The battles and stuff aren't super strategical in the sense of like, you know, Final Fantasy Tactics or XCOM or that sort of thing, but there are, you know, things you have to consider, like the battles play out in sort of like a real world space. And so mm-hmm. like one guy's special attack is called Reckless Charge, for instance, and he just does like this barreling charge through people, and anyone that's in a like a line gets hit by the attack, even if it's not the person you chose to target. Uh-huh. So like you want to pick someone who's at the back of the enemy group as they're moving around and like try to figure out, because like you don't control where they are, they're just kind of like moving around the battlefield as this is happening while you're waiting for your turn. So you kind of want to line everything up and use that attack correctly when it comes up, so you hit do the maximum amount of damage. You know, there's like attacks where you pick a guy up and spin him around and then throw him. And, you know, you want to pick a guy up that's in the middle of a group. And so you hit people with a spinning around. But then there's the flip side, which is if you run past other people, they basically get like D&D attacks of opportunity.
Yeah.
Where like if you spend too much time running past a guy, he will hit you and knock you out of your attack and you don't get to attack anymore. And so like you have to like play the odds of like, is it worth it to try and run past this guy and get the finishing blow on this person who is like behind another person? Or do I, you know, try and attack somebody else? Or do I go for like a bigger attack that gets everybody? And so it has a layer of depth to the combat that's enough to make it more than just like, oh, I'm hitting a button and hitting attack. Oh, I'm hitting another button and hitting another attack. You know, and it, that sort of like mind-numbing RPG formula where like you never want to use your magic outside of like the boss battles, so you're always just like hitting attack over and over again in like regular combat. Like each battle has like actual, you know, strategy to it.
Got it. It also sounds like a manga that I really like, Way of the House Husband. I would recommend
mentioned
that.
This before. I don't know if you've mentioned it on the podcast or not, because everything blurs together, but that name sounds familiar.
I would. It's right now, I think it's on book three or so, so it's not a lot, but you just need to read like the first or second. Each chapter is its own story, but it basically fits this sort of weirdness theme of like this one, Way of the House Husband, is basically about a guy who was a former like Yakuza enforcer, but now he's becomes basically a house husband, so not like a housewife, but he manages the house while his wife works as a lawyer or such. And it's just about like, it's a lot of weird zaniness of like this badass scene, or like cops see him and stuff and they recognize him, and he's got like the tattoos and his mannerisms are very Yakuza, but he's like out grocery shopping or making sure he gets the best vegetables, or he's out to buy some kitty litter. And it's just it's just a nice little distraction in the world.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I like that sort of play on the typical style of storytelling.
So if you want, I can, at some point, I'll loan you the book, or you can probably find it online or something. But yeah, Way of the House Husband.
Yeah. I don't read a lot of manga. Like, I've never watched a lot of anime. I've not read many manga. Sorry. And like, it's nothing against the people who do like all that sort of stuff. I just, for some reason, have never really gotten into it. And I know there's a lot of good ones out there, and everyone has their one where it's like, oh, you just have to read this one and you'll be hooked, I swear. Or just watch this show and it'll be so good and you'll love it. And
I was about to say, like, I could suggest it. I was like, no, this is, yeah, I have my own favorites, but I think I only own two sets of manga complete. I might have a couple more, but yeah. But I mean, the weirdest one that I know you haven't read, but you would really like, Scott Pilgrim. It's not a
I own Scott Pilgrim.
Okay, good.
Yeah, like I've read Scott Pilgrim, but I then lent my entire Scott Pilgrim set to a friend, and they have still not returned it. So, you know, I don't own that anymore, unfortunately.
Ooh. Yeah, and otherwise, the first set I got into was, I actually went and took forever collecting the Battle Royale mangas, or the Battle Royale. Yeah. Like,
Do I still own the Battle Royale book? I don't think I own the manga. I definitely don't own the manga, but at some point I owned the, like, novel version.
Yeah, I think that one came first. I can't remember
if I still own it and it's just packed away somewhere, or if I ended up donating it or turning it in.
Ooh. I know I still have, I have the book as well, and I've read, what I love is actually, just as a spoiler, it's not a spoiler, all three have different endings, so it's worth reading if you have read the book to check out the other two. If you've only watched the movie, definitely worth read the book or the manga. I like the manga's ending probably the most, then the book and then the movie.
Yeah, I've seen the movie. And I've read the manga. I think I read your manga back in college.
Might be back in college. That'd be around the
time. I've definitely read it. The only one I haven't actually read in full or seen in full for Battle Royale was the novel, which I think is why I got it. But then I never actually got around to reading it. And it's just sitting on my shelf.
And there's so many spinoffs of the book itself, of like, but they're weird spinoffs in the sense of like they just dissect the book. Like, I could see you reading, you know, the lighthouse scene?
Yeah, yeah.
There's a whole book based on just, like, the screenplay of shooting through the shots and stuff of the lighthouse scene and how it was done. And I'm just like, I mean, if you've read the book or you've watched the movie, you know the scene. You don't need to have a play, but there's a whole separate little book I always see about, like, the lighthouse scene. And let's go into it in detail. Oh, that's such a good movie, book, manga.
Yeah. I was really into Battle Royale for a while. Like, I think that the only I read Battle Royale fan fiction. Have you ever read 72 Hours?
No.
72 Hours is probably the best Battle Royale like fan fiction story that I've ever read, at least. And it's like long and like novel length on its own. It's really good.
Is it about the characters, or is it a different, like?
No, it's a new set of characters using the Battle Royale
system,
like set up as its own as a story, and it's really good, and I liked it a lot. And I was sad that one of the things that frustrates me the most is he wrote a sequel. And he made it about halfway through the sequel and then just dropped off the face of the earth and never finished it. So, like, you're, like, halfway through the story and you're like, no, what's going to happen next? And anyway, I wrote my own Battle Royale fan fiction story at one point. I didn't ever finish it, but I had planned out, like, who was going to win and everything. I've even had, like, one of my dream ideas, honestly, is if I ever have any sort of clout or agent or anything to talk to people, I want to pitch a Battle Royale TV series where, like, every season is a new set of students.
Ooh.
And, you know, every season it gets, like, there's 10 episodes in a season, and each season there's one winner and so on and so forth. And
I think I could watch that.
Yeah, like I feel like there that would between like people's love for reality competitions and everything else, like I feel like a Battle Royale TV show would do really well, especially if it was something like, you know, HBO or, you know, one of those Netflixes and something where people could watch the entire thing.
And you could bring back former, like, winners and stuff, or the actors to play in the next one and so forth.
Yeah. Yeah. I have, like, an idea. I already have, like, the first season, like, what the first season would be and all the characters and everything and how I would pitch it. And, you know. So, anyway, that's my own personal, you know, one of many ideas I've always had. Like if you ask me... sat me down and like said, you have one shot to pitch an idea for a TV show for a property that already exists, and you're just making an adaptation, you're not like making a new TV show or anything, and you have to base it on something that a property someone owns, I'd be like, give me the people that own the rights to a Battle Royale TV series. I've got their idea right here. I can do it. That would be my dream to write that. Anyway, so Miles Morales is also good, unrelated to Battle Royale or Yakuza or House Husbands. I feel like Miles Morales is a shorter version of the other Spider-Man game. It uses a lot of the same mechanics, but like expands upon it. On certain things to fit Miles's set of powers, and it's just a really good continuation of the series, and I'm like, it makes me really excited for the next like official, like the full game, which I'm hoping is going to be like a dual Peter Miles story at this point, because Miles's supporting cast and everything was perfect in this, and like I really love Miles as a character, and giving him and Peter equal time in the next game is probably the best way to go, especially because like Peter's play style in the original first Spider-Man game is very gadget heavy because it's Peter, you know, so like he has like a bunch of different gadgets that he uses, and like switching between those while you're like doing all the complex fighting and like dodging and all that stuff, it was part of how the rhythm of his fighting went. But Miles has like a lot more innate powers, so he has a couple gadgets, but not nearly as many as Peter did, and it's more related to like his venom powers and like electricity, and he also has stealth, and so mm-hmm. all that combines into a much different flow of combat, and I really like to see both of them have like their own, like you can play as either one throughout the entire story because they're like both working together, or like each has their own sections and you like flip back and forth and like can choose who you want to swing around the city as based on, you know, which play style you like more. But
I was going to ask, which kind of universe is the Miles Morales in the sense of, does he have his rogues gallery from like the movie, or is it more of like the villains and everything are like the Peter Parker ones?
He has, as far as, so I'm not super familiar with Miles from the comics, mm-hmm. but like in this game, it like the Prowler is in uh-huh. Miles Morales. The main villain is the Tinkerer, which I don't know is necessarily a Peter specific villain. The Tinkerer kind of shows up everywhere.
Yeah. I was thinking more in the sense of like the movie, where the movie gender switched a few people and kind of had some interesting takes on.
Like, I mean, it's Insomniac's universe, so it's like still in the same universe as their Spider-Man, which is its own thing. And like in this one, I don't want to go into too many spoiler details or anything, mm-hmm. but it's a continuation of the characters introduced in Insomniac's version. So it's like they have their own universe. It's not specifically tied to either the MCU or any other sort of canon universe. It's Insomniac's own thing. I really like what they did with the Prowler in this one, though. I will say that. It definitely felt like their own use of the character and not just like trying to make Spider-Verse that everyone loves, you know? And that goes for Miles as well. Like, Miles in this, it doesn't feel like they're just chasing Spider-Verse acclaim with what they did and how they presented the story. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I highly recommend Spider-Man. I played it on the PS4, and I know, like, the graphics and everything are prettier, and there's slightly better load times if you're on the PS5, but it was perfectly good on the PS4. I had absolutely no problems playing it. So unless you're like a super duper graphics nerd, I would say you don't have to skip out on Miles Morales until you get the PS5. Okay, so that about covers games. I did want to go over something real quick before we close out here. So it's December now as we're recording this, which means we're getting towards the end of the year, which means it's time to start thinking about Game of the Year and the good old-fashioned manatees that we've been doing on this podcast every year.
Dun, dun, dun. I'm just waiting. I'm waiting for it. Like, because I've thought about this, like, and it's always been, oh, it's too early. It's not time. It's not time yet. But yeah. I forgot they were called the fucking manatees. So.
You were the one that came up with that.
Yeah.
I'd just like to point that out. So the last 2 years, the manatees have sort of been more focused on me. And I guess they are named after me because they're the manatees. But like I'm the gamer, and so the manatees kind of just were me listing my favorite games of the year and you kind of coming in with like the two games you may have played that year, and what you liked. So I was thinking, and this is up to you, but like you've clearly been playing games this year, but they haven't all been released this year. And it feels sort of artificial to restrict you specifically to just 2020 games, especially since, you know, I'm trying to get you into being a gamer, and it feels sort of gatekeepy to be like, okay, we're going to talk about only 2020 games. And since you were a schlub and only played Animal Crossing, I guess we're going to make Animal Crossing your default game of 2020. And it feels bad to me.
Okay.
So I'm thinking maybe we expand the manatees this year, and maybe we come up with like a couple categories, kind of like Oscars, you know, and like we have like best game of 2020, but also maybe like something like best soundtrack or best, you know, multiplayer game. And, you know, I'm spitballing here. We can also possibly come up with, you know, maybe some things that are a little more Harvey Z and T-Man, like unique categories that kind of...
One of the things I was going to suggest or so is we could go back into our pool of audience people and ask them for their choices and nominations, perhaps.
We could.
And just to kind of see, but I'm thinking about it because also this was a weird year. Yeah. Like, I do agree. I like the idea of multiple categories because 2020 was a weird year, folks. Just plain and simple. It's a weird year. And I feel like if there's probably games that represent 2020, i.e. this is the Animal Crossing is the game I think of 2020, but for very weird reasons versus game of the year in terms of a good quality game.
Right.
If that makes sense. And I think it's good to have... I think if we had different categories, we could definitely work with that. Because I'm also thinking of like the games... Because I've definitely got probably a bigger roster of games to pick from, but I'd have to go back and see. But I definitely know like one of the heaviest games I played this year, like Breath of the Wild, did not come out this year.
Right, yeah. And you know, I've played some games that didn't come out this year either. And you know, so like maybe if we kind of expand a little bit, like I like listing things and I want to do like my top five games of the year because I like doing that.
I don't mind. I like having like a little bit of the year in summary or like a top five kind of thing just because, I mean, we did do the top 100 games. So it's kind of nice to know at least each year where it kind of stands.
Yeah. So like I wouldn't mind also doing that, but I feel like I want to get you involved a little more instead of just me listing what I liked for like an episode. So what do you think? You thinking maybe we can come up with some interesting categories for this?
Either categories or what I'll do actually is I should look back and see like what games have I played and what have we played maybe as a group and stuff like that, because I might have forgotten even some games that we might have discussed as like, oh yeah, we played this like one off or two times, or like maybe even this weird whatever game we're trying to play through, we still haven't beaten it.
Scourge. Oh, yeah, or Stasis.
Yeah, Stasis, like who knows? That could be a contender. But, like, yeah.
Yeah, I need to get back to playing that, too, don't I? Whoops.
Don't worry. I haven't played it either.
Sorry, we'll get together. Yeah. All right, so you got any, like, crazy, wacky ideas off the top of your head? Like, I'm trying to think of, like, what would be a Harvey Z category? It's like, game that tasted most like a popsicle.
I do appreciate that that's what you associate with me, and I do like that that's the wacky wild category of, like, synesthetic games, I guess. But, like, I feel like... Because I like the idea of, like, games that summed up the year, games, like, not necessarily in terms of gaming, but what did games mean for us? Like, the comfort game of the year, the weird game of the year that I'm just trying to think of, because I'm also trying to think of like what did we play or games I wish I could play, the envy like category of like what did I hear that you played that I want to play.
Oh yeah, that's a good one. I like that, the envy game.
So
where like somebody is playing something that, you know,
Harvey Z's envy game.
Yeah, Harvey Z wants to play, or like even I want to play.
Yeah, because actually there's several games of the year contenders probably that you've played that I'm like, oh man, I want to play that. And I can probably come up with a nomination like of like four or five just in that one category, certainly. Let's see. I think I could workshop with this.
Okay. So we'll workshop it. If you want, like, feel free to go ahead and do your strong arm tactics and see if you can find some games of the year and like other stuff. Like, see, because you did your canvassing for your questions back for your episode.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. So that's it for this episode. We're into December now. 2020 is almost over with. The dumpster fire is almost another year's dumpster fire. I don't know. We'll see how 2021 turns out. It's looking up. I feel like I can be positive, right?
Yeah. You know. Sure. Let's try that. I think we were trying to be positive and optimistic. That's why it's so weird to listen back. Definitely worth doing, though. But
yeah. All right. So where can they find you, Harvey Z?
You can find me on Twitter at TheZIsSilent.
You can find me on Twitter at TManPlaysGames. You can find our podcast at Make Me a Podcast. You can always email us at MakeMeAGamerPodcast@gmail.com. You can find my writings at TManWrites.com. You can find our Discord in the description below the podcast. And whenever I start streaming on a regular schedule, which probably won't be until 2021. I'm going to be realistic here. I'm trying to like set up planning and figure out how I'm going to tackle everything. But you can find me streaming on Twitch at Actually T-Man. And I'll probably be streaming here and there in December, but probably not on a fixed schedule. I'll start 2021 off with like figuring out exactly when I'm going to stream. Okay, and that's it for me. It's Harvey Z. Take us out.
Let's see. I was going to say, like, oh, you can tweet at us, email us, all of that stuff, but I'm probably going to go and try to find you guys. So just, if you make yourselves known, I'm going to find you and ask you, what's the game of the year? Tell me, what's the game of the year?
Are you trying to be Batman? Was that your Batman voice?
That was my Batman, but I have a microphone in front of me and I didn't want to get too aggressive on the mic as well. So I got really
self-conscious. Swear to me.
Yes.
Swear to me, your game of the year.
Who's the manatees?
You either die a villain or live long enough to see yourself become the manatee.
Oh.
Wait. I got that wrong.
We're the manatee.
We were the manatee all along.
Oh, the humanities.
Okay, you just had to do it, didn't you?
I mean, that's all I could think about. I wanted to say it, and none of us said it the whole time. And it's like, there's a big, shiny red button. You gotta push the button.